Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Think Orange podcast. My name is Dave. I have the pleasure of being your host today, once again, flying solo while our good friend Ashley is out on the Orange tour. But in fact, we are actually on the Orange tour right now. We have packed up the Think Orange bunker. We've put it into a little portable case and we've unpacked it somewhere, some part of the US where it is pouring down with rain. But I'm so glad that I'm safely inside with my producer, the one and only Kevin Jennings. Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Dave.
It has been storming like nothing on earth here today, hasn't it? It's been absolutely incredible. Thunder and lightning. So if the podcast goes blank, it's basically because we've lost power and we're sitting in the dark in the bunker.
It's because the enemy doesn't want us to win.
Amen. The enemy doesn't. Bringing the heat right from the outset, which is awesome. But the air conditioning is out in the bunker, so the heat is already here.
Once again, the enemy doesn't want us to win.
And he doesn't want us to win because we have an amazing episode planned for you today. The topic we're talking about today is how to lead when you're not in charge. And we're going to be hearing from two fantastic leaders who really are ahead of the game when it comes to this specific topic. First of all, we're going to be hearing from Frank Beeler. Frank is currently the Executive Director of Leadership Development at Orange, and he's the CEO of FaZe Family Centers. And if that wasn't enough, Kevin, there's a set of steak knives thrown in. He was also formerly the family pastor at Elevation Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. This is a guy who has worked in several levels of an organization. He knows what it means to lead up, and that's specifically what he's going to be talking about. And as soon as Frank's finished, I had the opportunity to sit down with my very good friend, Clay Scroggins, who is the lead pastor of North Point Community Church and author of a fantastic book. Kevin, have you read Clay's new book?
I have not finished it yet. But I did buy it and I started reading it. And so far, I've been really, really impressed. This guy is not a first time author.
No, he is an incredible writer. And the book is How to Lead When You're Not in Charge. You can pick up copies of it. We'll leave links in the show notes, so make sure you check those out. But I mean, really, I think today's episode is perfect for every one of our listeners. In fact, Clay talked about this in our interview, right? He wrote his book specifically with a specific audience in mind. And that audience was student leaders and student pastors, which is exactly the same audience that we have here on this podcast, right?
Absolutely. Children's ministry, those serving the next generation, preschool. So it's all about those who are serving this generation and how they can make sure they have influence with their leaders.
Yeah. And you know this, Kevin, anyone who is any sort of ministry background, any sort of ministry experience, you know that they have to lead up at some point, right? And this is why I think today's podcast is going to be so useful, because we are going to learn how we can lead those who we work for. We might not be the person in charge, and we often think of leadership just as being the people who are under us on the church hierarchy, but leadership is also leading up to those people who are further up the tree than us.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, I mean, I was talking to you before we recorded earlier today, and you were giving me a really great example of circumstances saying, hey, as an online pastor for North Point, the church is counting on you to lead in an area and also make sure the leadership team and the senior pastor and the senior leaders understand what they need to know. And so it's your job to lead them as they take North Point online.
Yeah, it's so good. You know, one of the things Clay talked about was part of leading up is managing your boss's anxiety. And the way that
you're giving away the good stuff.
It's because I'm so excited about today's episode. I know I'm super excited about it, but you know, he's going to unpack that a little bit later on in this episode. So make sure you stick around and check that one out as well. But before we get into it, Kevin, I just want to let everybody know that today's episode is brought to you by the one and only The Orange Conference, which is a 3-day conference in Atlanta, Georgia, for your entire family ministry team. Kevin, have you been to Orange Conference before?
I've been. This will be my fourth year.
Fourth year. You keep coming back.
I love it. It's one of the times in the year where I'm refueled every time, because it reminds me, I mean, as a person who works behind the scenes, getting to be up close and personal with leaders, it reminds me why I do what I do. I love it.
Absolutely love it. You know, momentum is not an accident. We don't just put our foot on the gas of a car and go, oh, surprise, look, the car's moving forward. It is not an accident. It's something we do deliberately. And that's what really the Orange Conference is all about, allowing you the opportunity to realign your team, increase your influence, and communicate more clearly with one end in mind. And that end is helping to connect families with the church. That's what we always talk about here at the Think Orange podcast. So you can go and register for the Orange Conference simply by going to theorangeconference.com. I'll say that again, theorangeconference.com. And hey, here's some great news. If you register by December 14th, you'll save $70 on your ticket. And if that's not enough, you'll also get bonus content from the tour that we are now on, the Orange Tour 2017. I mean, that's worth clicking on a URL for, right?
Absolutely.
And you didn't even have to type it in because we've put all of those URLs right there in our show notes. So make sure you check those out. But if you do want to type it out for yourself, you can visit theorangeconference.com and you'll also have the chance to win 2 free tickets to next year's event. That is absolutely incredible. So I'm going to give you a break. I'm going to give you a chance right now, just a really short musical interlude. We'll get Kevin to edit this in just a moment, like a 5-second musical interlude so that people can actually click on that URL, fill in their details, and go in the running for those 2 free tickets. And straight after that musical interlude, we're going to hear from Frank Bieler talking about leading up. Check it out.
There's a challenge ahead of us. Monday is coming for you. And we all know that it takes so much time, energy, and effort to get a great idea to actually take hold in our church. And we know that what we face ahead can be so very difficult. You may even feel like you don't have enough support, that your senior leader just doesn't get it, that they're not here to go after all the same things that you long for. And in some ways, you're right. But I've learned something in both business and now in ministry, that sometimes the reason they're not passionate enough, the reason they're not ready to make a decision right now, is because we haven't led them there. It might very well be our fault. It's usually because I haven't set them up for success. I've made the wrong assumptions. I've not given them everything they need to make that decision. What if it's not what's wrong with them, something that you can't even fix or control anyway? What if it's something that we need to change in the way we lead? What if there's room for us to get better at leading up? What if you could leave conference this year with real change in your ministry? It can happen. And over the next few minutes, I want to show you 5 very simple, practical steps that you can take to lead up in a more powerful way. Number 1, really simply, be ready. Now, of course, when you go into the meeting, you're going to come in organized with your presentation and all your papers and documents together and examples of resources. You're ready to go. But when I refer to being ready, I'm not just talking about you. Most leaders hate it when they get surprised. Here in the South, we say it would be a good idea to prime the pump a little. You see, in the meetings that you have in your one-on-ones every month or so or every week or so, you're talking about things that matter in your church, things to grow your church and see families engaged and empowered in new ways. You're wanting this to happen in these regular meetings. But sometimes when we come back from a conference, we come back and say we have a new idea. We don't have a new idea in and of itself. We have a new way to approach the very thing we've been longing to do in our church for a very long time. Now we can say we're ready. So here may not be the best way to approach this. It's one of the most common mistakes that we all make. We are excited about our meeting that's coming up with our senior leader. And maybe it's next Thursday. But you're going to be back tonight or tomorrow, and you've got church this weekend, and you see them on Sunday, And you're just passing down the hall and they're like, hey, I can't wait to hear what happened at Orange. I know you learned a lot while you were there. And then it happens. We get really excited and we vomit it all on them in the matter of 2 minutes. We put everything we've learned, everything Reggie said, and then this happened and this happened and it's going to change everything. That's going to make it really hard to implement that idea in the near future. We're going to get sideways really quickly. First step, be ready. Second step, be brief. When you actually have your meeting, be brief. After all, this will be our shortest step because all we need to do is take 5 minutes with our leader and say, here's where we're wanting to go. Here's why we want to go there. And here's how this falls in line with what we're wanting to do. And then pause and let them speak up and speak into what we want to do. But we're excited. We're passionate about what we do. So we go on and on and on. And they're sitting there the whole time wondering what we're even talking about. Number three, be smart. Being smart means we're prepared. And when we're prepared, we have something to offer of substance. Your boss expects you to be the expert. That's why they hired you, to give us insight and wisdom in our context around what it is that we need from you. So we're looking to you to do that. But it does make us a little concerned when I'm operating as a leader and somebody's bringing me an idea. And now they come in and they do their 5-minute pitch and they're clearly ready and they let me know what we're going with. It's all good up to this point. And then I ask one question. And if as a leader, the person that's coming to me is stumped, we're in trouble. Because I've been thinking about this for 5 minutes. And my first question has got you reeling and kind of wondering. I have gone into meetings and had to learn over time that one of the best things that I can do with my leader is to know the questions and concerns and objections before I ever go in the room. I know where it's going to be. I know how this is going to land. Be smart about how we approach this. Number four, be passionate. You see, ideas form in our hearts through a passion that God gives us. So it's natural for us to want to start with that passion, that energy, that excitement. But when it comes to leading up, I would say these other steps can actually magnify and focus our passion. Passion can be refreshing or overwhelming, much like a middle school boy's Axe body spray. If they don't receive it the same way we do, do you know what we usually want to do with that? We say we need to get more passionate. They don't get it, so let me just get more excited and more passionate about what we're going to do because that's going to help. It doesn't really help. Remember, when we get back from conference, we're going 100 miles an hour. We are so excited. Our hearts and minds are racing, and we're going to take a minute and jump into a meeting with them and ask them to jump on our train going that fast, and we wonder why it doesn't necessarily work out. I want to give you a really simple equation. Being smart without being passionate is boring. Being passionate without being smart is exhausting. But when we put being smart and that passion together, we can lead positive change over and over again. Now, there's one thing that's unique about passion. I want to stay here because this is where we live. This is what we do. When we present something with passion, you need to know that passion doesn't transfer as well as substance does. Because sometimes when we're leading up, we're not meeting with the decision maker. So let me paint a picture for you. I come with the passion and emotion of a Reggie Joyner. I've got my pictures in my pocket just in case I cry. And then I've got Sojo and Sam Collier's energy. And I give it all I've got. And they receive it. And they take the paper and the presentation. And they go into their meeting. So the kids pastor is really excited about something. Let's take a look and see if this really, really is helpful and makes sense. passion is very difficult to transfer, but substance, we can do something with that. Passion is perfect when it finds its right place, and it's not your first, second, or even third step, but there's a place for it. Number five, be flexible. It may not always play out the way that you planned for it to play out, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. When you present something to a leader, something happens. They ask questions. They push on it. They challenge some of your assumptions. And you know what? That's kind of what leaders do. Leaders lead. They can actually help you make your idea better in your context. But sometimes we get so rigid and so stiff that we're not willing to bend because we have our idea and it has to be this way. But I've found that when you won't bend, most of your ideas break. But what if this happened this year? We are here in ministry right now, and we see so much room for improvement. And we want to take our ministry all the way over here this year. But when you present to your leader and your senior leader, and they receive it well, and you have some conversations, and you talk about it with different volunteers, and you make it to about right here, you can either be frustrated and disappointed or angry, or see that you've made major progress over the course of a year. It's up to you. To be flexible is to filter things through your budget, your context, your circumstances, your situation in your church. If we don't follow these steps, we're going to miss out. If we don't learn to lead up, we're going to struggle and these ideas aren't going to connect. But you're here because you're passionate about the ideas and passionate about students, and you don't want to let down the next generation. But I would say one of the best ways that you can ensure that you don't let down the next generation is to improve the way you lead up.
Well, that was awesome. And sitting here to unpack that a little bit further, here in the Think Orange bunker is the one and only Clay Scroggins. Clay, how are you?
Dave, I'm phenomenal. Thank you.
Welcome to the Think Orange bunker. It's good to have you in here. This is your first time with us, right?
First time. Honestly, got to say, first time caller right now. So thank you. We were just talking about how it's a bit early in the morning, but not early for Dave Adamson, because I usually get emails from Dave Adamson at like 5:45 a.m. So this is like, even though I think we're still in the sevens right now, it's like mid-morning to you.
It's midday. I'm ready for lunch. I'm going to Firehouse Subs in a couple of minutes.
You're like a 70-year-old.
Hey, so we are talking about leading up, and we just heard from Frank explain a little bit of that. But you know, having you in here is perfect timing, because you just recently launched a brand new book called How to Lead When You're Not in Charge, which really is the concept of leading up. Can you tell us, like, in 30 words or less, where did this concept come from, and what was it like to go through this process?
Dave, that is the hardest thing to do it in 30 words or less. That's like, I just wasted about 15 right there.
Well, let me ask you a different question then. In 30 words or less, tell us the thumbnail of who Clay Scroggins is, because I'm sure there are a lot of people who know who you are, who are listening right now. But for those people who don't, who are you?
Sure.
Give us a little bit of your resume.
So I'm an Alabamian. I grew up in Tuscaloosa.
Is that a
Alabama.
Real word?
I don't know. I just used it though. I own the word.
Own it.
Grew up in Tuscaloosa, moved to Atlanta, started attending North Point in 1998, was a volunteer, high school volunteer.
And how old were you at this point?
I was 18. Started attending North Point. It was pretty new. Things were blowing up. Things were popping off at North Point in the late 90s. In the early 2000s, North Point was, I mean, it was growing like a rocket.
Yeah.
And I had a kid in my small group named Reggie Paul Joyner, who is the oldest child of the one and only Reggie Joyner.
Wow.
So that was my ticket, man. I knew if I could not screw this up, one day I could be on the Orange podcast, on the Rethink podcast.
Back then in 1998, you knew.
Oh, I promise you,
you were
I
prophetic.
Knew this dude, Reggie Joyner, is the man. So now I'm a pastor. I went to Georgia Tech. I was a student there, but I graduated from college, moved to Dallas Seminary, went to seminary, graduated from seminary, met mm-hmm. my wife there, and a pastor at North Point. But I spent 10 years in student ministry, and now I do campus pastoring.
That's awesome.
I'm a campus pastor.
So a lot, most of our listeners are in the student ministry world at various levels. And, you know, to hear of somebody who came to a church, started just being in the you know, as an 18-year-old volunteering, how did you work your way up? What was that process like for you? Because this leads into a lot of what we're going to discuss today about the power of leading up.
Well, that term I have to be careful with, work your way up, because I think a lot of time in student ministry, that is, that sounds horrible to student pastors because the student pastor at our church, Darren Youngstrom, if I were to say to him today, I promise you, if I were to call him right now and say, Darren, what do you want to do when you're done with student ministry? He would say, retire, because I'm doing what I want to do. So that is how I felt. I mean, when I was a volunteer, I was not looking to do more. I was loving what I was doing, which I think is really key.
Yep.
And so I say all that to say, I wasn't trying to work my way up, which I think is the best way to do it. I think whatever job you're in today, you need to sell out to that job like it's the last job you've ever had.
Yeah.
And if you change jobs, I think people around you need to be like, what?
Yeah.
We were floored by that. We thought you were going to do this forever, because why not? I mean, why not buy in at that degree? So honestly, when I think about working in student ministry, when I was the high school pastor at North Point, that is all I wanted to do. And sadly, I still kind of look back longingly, because it was my favorite season of life. And it's the most fun I've ever had in ministry doing that. So I guess I did move my way up to more responsibility, but life got harder and life got worse in a way, because now I talk to adults and gosh, it's harder on so many levels, but it's also more boring. Student ministry is where it's at.
Yeah.
Where it's at.
So what I'm hearing you saying is essentially, it's not about looking forward to what's to come down the road. It's focusing on what you're currently doing, doing that to the best of your ability with the best possible attitude.
Yes. That's me. I mean, that's where I am right now.
Yeah.
Because this is about the fourth, I'm 37, and it's about the fourth or fifth job I've had at North Point. And so, I mean, I've changed jobs about once every 3 or 4 years, which is, for some people, that's a lot of jobs. And for some people, that's not a lot of jobs. But I think the key to doing well in the role you're in is to buy in like it's the last job you'll ever have, but also be aware that it's not. I mean, you know, I don't know how many people are listening today, but however many there are, probably like 97% of us are not in the last job we'll ever have.
Yeah.
There's another job down the road. And for some of you, it might be right around the corner. And for some of you, it might be a couple of years away. But the key to making today better is being fully content with where you're at, believing that God put you where you are today, and believing God has you where you are for a reason. In Esther, that line that Mordecai tells her, for such a time as this, Esther, what if God put you in this role for today? What are you going to do about it? That's what I'm trying to do today, is to go, hey, do I want to do something else? Sure. I mean, and people ask me that a lot, is, hey, when are you going to go out and do your own thing? Like, when are you going to go?
Yeah.
You know, because I'm under the umbrella of Andy Stanley, and that dude he's a skinny man who casts a big shadow. I mean, he is the man. Yeah. I mean, he is the man. And he's amazing and he's awesome. But man, when I stand up on stage, I am standing in a sea of disappointment in people's eyes, because people are like, I traveled from South Korea. I'm so glad to be here. I can't wait to hear Andy preach. And I'm like, he's not preaching today. I'm actually preaching. So I'm so sorry to disappoint you.
That's awesome.
But, and so I know there will probably be another job for me someday, but I've just had to get to the point where I'm like, well, I can't focus on that. I got to focus on where I am today, and I've got to be content. And I know, you know, I know the topic of our conversation is going to be, to those of you who are youth pastors, student pastors, kids pastors, next gen pastors, how do you lead up? You feel like you work in a job where you have an oppressive boss,
and
you're like Joseph in the prison right now. And you got that prison warden who's breathing down your neck about, you know, you need to get more students there, quit spending so much money, or turn the music down, or quit telling the students to quit breaking into the nursing room and wrecking shop in there, whatever it is, you're probably fighting all those battles. And I'm just telling you, maybe the best thing you could do today is just to buy into the job that you're in like never before. And that will help you lead your boss better.
Yeah.
Is if your boss knows that you are ultra committed.
Yeah.
I mean, to talk about Darren Youngstrom again, the fact that Darren doesn't want to do anything else and is in his calling and is exactly where he wants to be, man, it just makes me want to give him more resources.
Yeah,
because I know he's in it for the long term.
You've talked about and you've touched on something that's super important, I think. And full disclosure, I get the opportunity to work with you on a daily basis. And one of the things that I see in you all the time is how loyal you are to Andy, to North Point as an organization. But it's not about loyalty. For me, you seem to just love following the leader. You love following that model, that vision that we have. How important is being a good follower to leading?
Great question.
Your boss.
Well, I work in an organization. I know in a lot of churches, the word loyal is a compliment. To Andy, I don't want to speak for him. So who am I to say what he thinks? But if I were to guess what he thinks about the word loyal, I think he hates the word.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so funny because for so many churches, that is like the most supreme value.
Yeah.
That's right, is loyalty. And I think this is part of learning, you know, one of your jobs. You know, in marriage, Dave, I know you know this because I, like you get to watch me, I get to watch you, and you've got an incredible marriage, so it seems, and your wife's amazing. And it seems like you do a great job being a student of your wife, and that's the key to having a great marriage. Mm. Well, in the same way, we need to be students of our bosses. I mean, we need to know what are our bosses like? In fact, I'm meeting with a coach right now who said the other day, he said, "Hey, your job is to manage the anxiety of your boss." And I was like, dang, like, what does that mean? I had to chew on that for a long time, but I started thinking about it. That is important. I need to be aware of what he's nervous about. What's he worried about? What's concerning him? Because that needs to concern me. And loyalty does not concern him. I mean, he's just not, well, I would say personal loyalty doesn't concern him, but he would rather the people that work for him feel loyal to the organization for sure.
Yeah.
And so, you know, because of that, like, we're not in a culture where, you know, a lot of places you go, when you preach, your intro is praising the pastor there, you know? If you did that at North Point, it would be weird. I mean, if I stood up on a Sunday and was like, "Hey, I just want to say before I get going, Andy and Sandra Stanley, they are just amazing. And y'all, we have the best pastors or what?" I mean, you just don't, that would be very uncomfortable for him. He would not want that. And I have learned that. But what he would be cool with me saying is, "Hey, I just want to let you know, like, this is the greatest church in the world. I mean, this place is made," because he wants us to feel committed, dedicated, faithful to the organization, to the vision of what we're trying to do together, and not to him personally. So yes, I do feel a sense of loyalty, but not necessarily to Andy. And to your greater point, Dave, which I think you're right on, yes, if you want to have influence as a student pastor, you need to model followership. Mm. You can't just be a follower. You need to model it. I'm talking like on the runway in Paris, you need to walk it out in front of people like Andre 3000 with his t-shirt on and walk it out. You need to be modeling it.
Okay, I'm jumping in here, Dave.
Hey, this is our producer, Kevin.
I jump in occasionally when I really...
Kevin,
I have been so perplexed this whole time because I'm like, when is Kevin going to get in?
Yeah, I usually don't say anything, but there's every once in a while I just feel compelled to open my mouth. And this is one of those moments. And I'm in full transparency. I think that, you know, I think as a person who's been rising to different organizations and had opportunities, and I consider myself an emerging leader. I feel like the leaders I worked with feel the same way. I think a lot of people probably ask themselves, how do you be an effective follower with vision? Because I think, you know, because separate of even...
Feel at odds.
They do
totally.
feel like they're at odds. And I'm not so much even... I think we're going to talk about some great principles about how to actually lead your boss. But I think even just saying, no, but even the idea of saying, I'm okay being a follower, but I have this thing you've asked me to steward. I'm prepared to do it. I'm motivated to do that thing. I'm committed to this thing you told me to do. How do I do that with vision and passion and drive it forward without overstepping my bounds as a follower? You know, are there any kind of things you just kind of use in your own brain to kind of say, hey, here's something I ask myself or a way to kind of keep myself and make sure I haven't overstepped my bounds there?
I mean, I think the Hillsong, there we've adopted some of their language around that, the house model. Bobby Houston wrote that book, Heaven is in This House. It's a great read, and the metaphor is just real simple, that the church is a house and there's many rooms in the house. And what I've tried to do, because I work in a greater organization that's larger than just North Point Community Church, and so I can't have a vision that is off, that is not congruent with the vision of North Point Ministries. So I think, first of all, it's owning the greater vision and saying, whatever vision that I have for North Point Community Church, it's got to be able to fit within. It's got to be dovetailed with the greater vision that we have. So, I mean, that's the first thing, is you got to be able to buy into the big vision. And the challenge is, I bet a lot of you are sitting there going, that's the problem. We don't have a big vision. I don't know what the vision is, which you can help with that. You know, you might work for someone who's a great, you know, this is what oftentimes happens. The job of a senior pastor is so multifaceted. It's hard. I mean, it's hard to be a great visionary, a great shepherd of people, a great leader of an organization, dynamic when it comes to raising money. It's hard to do all of that. So you might work for someone who is a great, maybe local pastor, and they're not Steve Jobs. You know, they're not a visionary. But reading Steve Jobs' biography, he would have made a horrible pastor, I think, because he was a jerk to people. But you might work for someone who is good with people, but just doesn't have a lot of vision. You can come along and help with that. You can help ask questions. You can help say, hey, can we, and you might even be able to provide some language around what you think is in the heart of your pastor to be able to help sculpt some vision. But you need to help understand what is the big vision for the organization, for the bigger church, and then how can what I want to do fit in under the greater vision.
Clay, you said something before that I wanted to circle back to. You said that you need to manage your boss's anxiety.
Yeah.
How do you find out what your boss is anxious about? Because I'm sure there are a bunch of student pastors listening to this right now, agreeing with that principle, but wondering how they get that information.
Yep. You know, last night, Dave, we had this men's event that you and I were together at, and that question that they asked of what would you have told yourself 10 years ago? That was a great question. And man, I was sitting around some dudes that got deep fast on that question. And I felt they went so deep. They were talking about like getting clean. And this dude was talking about how selfish he was and how much of a jerk he was to his wife and his kids. And I sat there and I thought, well, I guess I better share the first thing I thought. So when I thought, what do I want to tell myself 10 years ago? The first thing that popped in my head was listen to your wife. That was the first thing I thought about. Because, you know, God has put the spouse in the relationship, particularly women have this intuition, and they are like the barometer in the weather. You know, the barometer can read the pressure dropping before the weather starts to change. And women have that sixth sense of doing that, you know, where they see something coming before you even know. And men, we're just dumb and we're like just pressing forward, you know, running right into a slaughterhouse. So I think in the same way, I think listening to your boss is, it's amazing how foreign that is to so many people. But instead of all, most people get in front of their boss and all they want to do is sell their idea.
Yeah.
They're like, oh crap, this is my moment. I better have my elevator pitch ready because it's my moment to be able to sell everything that's going on and this event that I need more money for, or this thing that I want to talk about that needs stage time or whatever it is. Instead of listening, I mean, imagine like going, hey, what's up with you? Like what's taking up your mind? What's occupying your space? What are you concerned about? I mean, I think, you know, for us, the times when we hear that most are when Andy goes and preaches other places, when he speaks at other spots. And so I try to be real diligent not to kiss up or to, I mean, I don't even care if he ever knows that I'm there, but it just helps me understand what's he really thinking about. Because a lot of times, our staff meetings and those outside places are where you really hear what's occupying his space. And I know, you know, he just did the Deep and Wide tour. And one of the things that I heard came out of it was him talking about attendance. And that's a big thing for us right now, which I knew that was a concern of his already, but that was good. That affirmed something that I knew he was real concerned about. Yeah. I don't have a lot of regular conversation with him, but he randomly sent me a screenshot of some other churches that are doing Monday night services. Well, I would be an idiot to not pay attention to that. Clearly he's going, hey, this seems to be important. And so The thing is, though, you can't fake it. You can't be.
And that was gonna be my next question. How do you do that without you use the word kiss up? How do you do that without appearing even to have the appearance of a? Because that's what I would be concerned about. If I just randomly now sent Andy a text, "Hey man, how are you doing?" I would feel like that's just going to be received so badly.
Yeah. I think, well, first of all, it's got to be genuine. I mean, so that in this book that I wrote called How to Leave When You're Not in Charge, I spent a lot of time talking about identity, which I felt a little off. I didn't start there. I started like, hey, what are the specific behaviors that I'm trying to do to lead, to cultivate more influence? But I do think so much of it is wrapped up in identity is, do you believe that God controls your destiny or not? Do you believe that God is the one who can fire you and hire you, or do you believe it's your boss who can do that? And I'm trying to be more fearless in my leadership and not, you know, the senior pastor carries the big sword. I mean, he's like the, you know, Saul with the, you know, spear, and we're over here, David playing, you know, just straight working that harp, you know, like the harp of student ministry. Yeah. And at all times we're just like watching out if there's a spear flying by our head. And I'm trying to be fearless in that and not because, and the reason I went the other way, I went on the other side of the coin. I think if you are fearless in your ability to challenge, you can also be genuine in your kindness and your curiosity. Mm. And I think that those go hand in hand, that the people that are scared to challenge are also the people that are fake in their interests and curiosity and kindness, honestly. And so that's how, and I mean, that's what Lencioni says in the 5 dysfunctions of a team. I mean, it's interesting. He starts with trust. Trust is the number one attribute of a great team. And I think the reason why, and he talks about dissension and how important hard conversation is. If you're not willing to disagree with something, then I don't know that I can believe you when you say something kind or when you show some kind of interest. Mm. So I think that, I mean, for me, that's what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to be as genuine in my frustration as I'm genuine in my kindness and my curiosity, and hope that it comes off as real, because it feels authentic and real to me.
Yeah.
But I'm with you, Dave. I mean, that when I smell BS in someone, man, it sets me back months in a relationship. Mm. You remember when you're dating, like back in the day, and you first got that, like, oh no, something's wrong. Like, I don't know if I'm digging this. And then it's just like, man, it goes from like,
yeah,
it goes from it like,
escalates quickly.
Oh my gosh, quickly. You know, it's like 3 days later, you're like, the whole thing's over. I mean, that's the way relationships work, because trust is, man, it's everything.
Yeah.
So I think that's very important for everybody listening to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Yes, you should be interested in what your boss is concerned about. And yes, you should challenge your boss when you feel like it's appropriate, but you need to be straight, genuine in it. And I mean, David checked his heart in front of God every day. And I think that's also a big part of this, is checking your own heart. Search me, God, test me.
Yeah.
See if there's anything offensive in me.
So I know there's some student pastors and some children's pastors who are listening to this who, as you said before, already have their elevator pitch ready to go for that one moment in the hallway when they cross paths with the lead pastor. When they're in that moment, the question I have for you is this. Is there a difference between godly ambition and selfish ambition in those moments? Because you have an elevator pitch, because you have a vision that is important to you. And you know, we want to hustle that vision. We want to work towards that. But hustle has become a bit of a dirty word in the church world. Is there a difference between having a godly ambition and selfish ambition?
Well, for sure. I mean, over and over again, and you know, if you just did a search on the word ambition in the Old Testament and the New Testament, there's way more about selfish ambition than there is about any other kind of ambition. Mm-hmm. But I spent a chapter on identity, because I felt like that was so crucial to being able to lead well when you're not in charge. I mean, it's important when you're trying to lead well when you are in charge, but particularly when you're not in charge, if you don't have a secure identity, believing deeply in who God says you are, you got no hope to me. And then the next place I went after that was to talk about kibosh, this Hebrew word that I found fascinating. And I don't know, everybody's done this before, but you know, student pastors, if you've preached sermons where you're like, I think that was for me more than that was for anybody else, which that's dangerous. I mean, you can't live your life that way. However, there are times when that happens, clearly, but I felt like this chapter on ambition was really for me, because this word kibosh in the Old Testament, in the very beginning of Genesis, there's the mandate, the creation mandate, which mm-hmm. is to fill the earth, hallelujah, and to subdue it. And the verb subdue it is the word kibosh, the Hebrew word kibosh, which we know that word as put the kibosh on that. I'm trying to snuff something out. I'm going to shut it down. It's really what I think Jesus talked about in Mark 10 when he said, do not be like those rulers who lord their authority over others and they keep people under their thumb. He says, not so with you. So somehow the thing that was pure and innocent and godly and holy that God put in us to go subdue the earth, to go make something great, to bring organization to something, to give something enough space to let it flourish, that has gotten co-opted. That is, I think sin has perverted that. And that godly ambition that I think God has put in every one of us to go and make something great. I mean, it's in every single one of us to want progress, to want to build something, to want to give something enough space to make it grow. But it gets distorted by the sinfulness of the world, really, or gets distorted by our own selfishness. And it becomes this nasty, gross, wretched ambition, which shows up in one of two ways. Either this unbridled ambition of I got to get everyone out of my way so that I can lead without any authority or any obstacle at all. Or I am passive and I'm just going to wait until they give me more authority before I do anything. So neither one of those are great. So in that very moment right there, yes, that you're challenging your boss. Yes, I think there is a choice that we have to make of, am I going to do this in a Genesis 1:28 pure way of I'm trying to subdue the earth, meaning I'm trying to make something better. I'm trying to make something great. I'm trying to flesh out goodness for people so that they can do something great with their lives, or this selfish ambition. I'm trying to do like Kid Rock. I'm trying to get mine. You know, Kid Rock is all about, I don't know why, but I feel like every song of his, it's like, man, I'm trying to get mine. Like, that's all I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get mine. And too often in my life, I have approached my boss with that same mentality of like, I'm just trying to do me. I'm just trying to get mine. And that's dangerous because that's not ministry. Ministry is I'm trying to help others. That's very different than get mine. So I think that's the question you got to ask is, when you're challenging your boss, are you trying to get something for you, or are you trying to help other people? And hopefully you can find a place of purity and honesty in that.
Now, Clay, you've spoken earlier in this podcast that you were a student pastor yourself. And you mentioned something before we even recorded that you wrote this book for you. Explain what you're trying to say to you.
Yeah.
The little version, little Clay, what were you saying? What was big Clay saying to little Clay?
Yeah. So I work with a gal named Susie Gray. Well, we work with a gal named Susie Gray, who's really, she's kind of been the agent on this project. And she made me do a psychographic for who I'm aiming for, which, man, is so helpful to do. Listen, if you're a student pastor today and you have not done just Google the term psychographic, look up images, find a chart of somebody who's laid out 20 questions that you need to answer about the kind of student you're trying to go after, trying to reach, it would be the most helpful thing that you do today, because it'll also help you cast better vision for your senior pastor. If you went to your senior pastor and said, here is exactly who I am writing to. And so for me, I came up with this character named Evan, who was really just a 27-year-old version of myself. Evan is educated, graduated from seminary. He's got some debt from school, has a lot of dreams about the way ministry should be, got into ministry for the right reasons, was like giddy about ministry. But the longer he has been in ministry, the more oppressive his pastor feels. And he doesn't hate his pastor, but he doesn't love his pastor because his pastor is in the way. His pastor is putting his thumb on his ideas. And that is not necessarily the experience that I had, but that was who I was writing to, as a 27-year-old youth pastor with some seminary debt who just had their first child and is just a little bit dismayed, has some disappointment about the way ministry has worked out, and would go and do something different, but is kind of locked into the job because of some debt and got to have a job and got this new baby, and is just going like, man, I thought I knew how to lead, but now I'm just frustrated because there's too much in my way.
Yeah.
So, the other day, somebody from our publisher said, hey, Clay, this is really good news, but we're really finding that this book is resonating with student pastors. And I was like, well, I hope it does. I mean, that is who I wrote it for. I mean, that was who I had in mind when I was writing every word of the book, was a 27-year-old youth pastor. Somebody out there is listening going like, oh crap, I'm 27. My name's Evan. I just got married. I got a baby. I got some debt.
Well, we want to hear from that, Evan. He should write in right now.
That's right.
Hey, so Clay, you're kind of on the other side of this now. I know that you still report up to Andy.
Right.
But you also, you know, North Point Community Church, 12,000 people attend on a Sunday. And it's a staff of
100.
Yeah. So you sit at the top of that level.
Yeah.
What? So I want to ask you the reverse question.
Yeah.
What are you looking for as the leader? What are you looking for? How can people lead you better? What does that look like from your staff?
Well, I don't want to just quote the book, but that's what I'm looking for. That's a great question, a well-phrased question. And that is what I started doing. You know, a lot of times we think like, oh, well, I'm frustrated with my boss because he's this or she's this or whatever. And what we fail to realize is that if you flip it around, there's somebody today sitting around complaining about your leadership. Mm. And whatever frustration you have, allow that frustration to inform the way you're leading.
Mm.
Because it's the same thing. A lot of times we just think, nobody's sitting around complaining about me. They love working for me. No, somebody is sitting around today mad at something you are currently doing.
Yeah.
And you think because the world revolves around you, and I'm saying this because I think the world revolves around me, that no, I'm the only one who's like Kendrick Lamar says, this whole Kendrick Lamar's last album, every line is like, ain't nobody praying for me. Ain't nobody praying for me. And I'm like, Kendrick, like K-Dot, like, why is nobody praying for you? Like, what are you so upset about that you feel like everybody's just moved on in life and nobody's praying for you? But I feel like that's how we feel sometimes as student pastors. Like, man, ain't nobody praying for me. Like, I gotta do me and get mine. And I gotta do my own thing because nobody is praying for me. But the truth is, if you're not praying for your senior pastor, then yeah, there's probably not anybody praying for you either. So just start with praying for him or praying for her.
Yeah.
And then what I bet you'll start finding is the way you lead up is the way people around you will lead up. So I tried to answer the question of, yes, what do I need to do to be a better leader without authority? But I think the same is true that the people that work for me, I want them leading themselves well. I mean, when I find people on our team that are reading books on their own, that have spent time thinking about something, man, it lights me up in the best way.
Yeah.
I want people who are positive about what we're doing. I want people who are excited about what we're doing. When I interviewed Shane Todd at Chick-fil-A about this topic, he's an operator who started selling the milkshake before Chick-fil-A launched the milkshake. Amazing story. But Shane said, Clay, what do you think your boss wants? Do you think your boss wants somebody who's not excited about what's happening today? Your boss wants people who are excited, enthusiastic about what we are doing today. Mm. And that is so true. That's what I want. I want people walking around thinking what we're doing is the most important thing in the world and excited about it. So I want people leading themselves. I want people who are choosing positivity. And then I want people who are thinking critically. I want people who are bringing value. And that's what we talked about earlier, that if you're not willing in a meeting to say, no, what we're doing is not working and there is a better way. And I think it's this.
Mm.
And the reason why I know that is because I've been leading myself well and I've spent time thinking about it, researching it. I put a plan together and this is what I think we ought to do. That is a critical thinker that, man, it is like gold, because I can't think about everything for our organization.
Yeah.
I can't think about everything for what I'm trying to lead. And so when someone, it's like they're getting a shoulder underneath the weight of what we're doing.
Yeah.
And they're going, hey, I got some thoughts that I think could help. Man, it is like a literal breath of fresh air. It's like that oxygen that they give athletes when they just huffed it down the field, you know? I mean, it's so refreshing.
Hey,
and then the last thing is
to
reject passivity. That's what I want people who are. Pick something up. Don't sit around with your hands open going, hand me something.
Yeah.
Because now you're asking me to do my job and your job. No, pick something up. Anything. Pick anything up. I don't care what it is. But show me something you're picking up and how you're working on it. And man, it's a blessing. And it might be the wrong thing, but that's okay. Like I'd rather somebody pick something up than sit around and wait on somebody to hand them something. So that's the big idea for me.
So I have no doubt that there's somebody driving in their car right now, listening to this going, I agree with everything you just said, Clay, but You don't know my boss.
You don't know me.
You don't know the situation that I'm in. And those opportunities just don't present themselves. What's your advice to that person who agrees with this in principle, but doesn't feel like they have the opportunity, doesn't feel like they have the authority or whatever it might be to actually express that to their leaders?
Yeah. I mean, I would say, for one, you might be right. Well, number one, you are right. I don't know you and I don't know your situation, and every situation is unique. And yes, I'm spouting off these theoretical, philosophical principles of leadership, but they may or may not work in your world. But here's what I know to be true. They are working in mine. Mm. A lot of people, this has been the biggest pushback I've gotten from this book, is they're like, well, you work for Andy Stanley. Like, he seems like the greatest person in the world.
I see this all the time on Twitter when, you know, because I follow you on Twitter and I see people writing these things to you.
Yeah, which I'm like, yeah, he's awesome. I mean, I didn't write this book to try to throw any shade on my boss. I think my boss is great, but it's still hard. I mean, it's a different hard. I mean, he is the Bill Gates of church in my eyes.
I agree.
And so it brings its own challenges. I mean, you got to bring your A game every single day. And so I don't know what your challenges are, but I've got challenges. They just might be different than yours. Mm. But I'm just telling you, these are the practices I'm trying to put into play so that I can be a better leader exactly where I am. But yes, I don't know your situation. So yes, the other thing I would say, Dave, is, a lot of times people use that as an excuse to allow them to not do what they know they need to do, which I understand that, because you're like, my boss sucks. You know, I mean, he's horrible, or she's doesn't know what she's talking about, or they micromanage, or yes to all that. Yes, I get it. My problem is the question I would ask is, do you think God is surprised by your bad boss? Like, do you think God is like knocked off his throne, like wobbling, going like, crap, what are we going to, can God say crap? I don't know. Like, oh no, what are we going to do at First Baptist Church? We've got a bad leader and now we got a youth pastor who's trying to figure out how to work for a bad leader. Oh no. Like, looking around at the angels trying to be like, somebody got it. Like, do we have a playbook on how to work for a bad leader? Mm. Are you joking me? I mean, like, every story in the Old Testament and the New Testament is about somebody trying to figure out how to work under an oppressive boss. Mm. Every one of them. Yeah. I mean, nobody was like, man, I got this great boss and like, I just can't figure out, I can't fit everything in because it's so easy and so awesome. No, everybody worked for a bad boss. But the beauty is that God is a God who seems to reward our difficult work in difficult times by giving us strength.
Yeah.
And where you are today, if you will apply additional energy, it will work out in exponential strength in the situation you're in, because that's the way the weight room works. You know, I hate the weight room because the weights are heavy. That's the point.
Yeah.
The weights are heavy because the resistance builds strength. And so where you are today might be the best workout you will ever get, and it might make you stronger than it would ever make you any other way. Mm. So do not use your difficult boss as an excuse to not apply disproportionate energy to what you're trying to make happen today. No, it means you need to lead yourself even better. It means you need to be even more positive, to spend more energy thinking critically, to be even more adamant about rejecting passivity where you are today, because it will work out even better for you if you can work it out in your world today.
So, you know, I'm about 3/4 of the way through the book. Absolutely love it. The big premise that you have is probably the last question I want to ask you for today. Is being the leader the same as being in charge? Or is being a leader the same as being in charge?
Thanks for the question, Dave. That was like the greatest softball that you could have ended
with. I'm trying to alley-oop
you
in.
Thank you. Absolutely, 100% hard pass, no. That being the leader is not the same thing, or being a leader is not about being in charge.
But we mix that up, right?
Well, that is your point. That is the premise of the whole book, is that I mix it up. I mean, I mix it up thinking, and what happened was is, ironically or coincidentally, I was getting more authority and the lie was being exposed even more. So the more authority I got, the more I realized that authority doesn't work, which was helpful to me, because a lot of people,
And by authority, you mean influence as well, right?
No, no. I mean your job, your title, okay, your position, your office. That the bigger the office, the more close to the corner it is,
yeah,
the bigger the title, people think that the more I'm going to now be able to lead.
Yeah.
But I was experiencing that in an inverse way, that the more authority I was getting, the less I was realizing that the authority worked.
Mm.
Because I just thought, once I was a student pastor, I thought, well, I can't do all that I want to do because I'm not a campus pastor yet. Once I become a campus pastor, then I'm really going to be able to do all that I need to do or want to do. And then I got to be a campus pastor and I was like, oh dang, like this isn't any easier. And then I got to be a campus pastor at a bigger church. And I was like, oh dang, this keeps getting harder, not easier. The authority still doesn't work. And that's the point of this book is that, you know, and I started thinking back to myself when I was 27 years old, wishing I had more authority.
Yeah.
And I wish I could go back to myself and say, if you had it, it wouldn't work because that's not how leadership works.
Yeah.
So don't wish you had more authority or don't let your wish for more authority be an excuse for not leading well today.
Yeah.
That you don't have to have more authority to be able to have influence. You can influence from the seat you're in. In fact, when you have authority, the way you will lead is the same way you're learning how to lead now. So it makes today even more important that if you can learn how to cultivate influence without authority, now that I'm in the seat I'm in, I'm learning, oh, wow, the things I did to cultivate influence are paying off and the opportunities I missed to cultivate influence, I'm paying for.
Mm.
And so what do you...
Can you say that again?
I hope I can say that again. But
I can say it for you.
Okay.
The opportunities I had to develop my influence that I used paid off, and the opportunities I did not have, I'm paying for. That was really great.
Yeah, that was awesome. That's tweetable right there.
Well, I think it's, I'm not trying to say something, I'm not trying to Rick Warren some sentence, you know, I'm trying to be real. That is the truth that I have regret on the moments that I didn't capitalize on cultivating influence because, you know, now I sit in meetings, Dave, even with you, I don't have any authority over you and you don't have any authority over me.
Mm.
So anything that I do at work under the influence of Dave Adamson is because Dave Adamson has influence over me.
Mm.
And vice versa.
Hmm.
And I am just learning that that is more true, that I thought that I would have more authority and I'd be able to tell people what to do and make more decisions and pass out more commands. Man, Frank Blake, the CEO of Home Depot, helped me understand this in a unique way because that dude was in charge of 350,000 employees.
Hmm.
And he said, it hit me when I was the CEO and I gave out this big thing of here's the plan of what we're going to do. And I walk by the trash can and see all the flyers in the trash can. The things that he had printed for everybody to pay attention to. He was like, they just threw it away. Because even then, and you know, what we think that I'm going to be able to just command everybody to do what I think they're going to do. That's not the way it works. I mean, we are volunteers even in the organizations that we work in.
Yeah.
If I wanted to quit today, I could just quit. If somebody started putting a gun to my head saying, this is what you got to do and this is what you can't do and you better and how dare you. And it's exactly why some youth pastors are thinking about quitting today because somebody's putting a gun to your head.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work. Authority-based leadership does not work. It works in North Korea if anyone would say it's working, but it doesn't work in our capitalistic...
Yeah.
Free society that the way, and I believe it's honestly, it's God's kingdom. The way God designed leadership to work is through influence. Even with authority, influential leaders have influence and that's why they're great leaders.
Yeah. I think this principle works in our families as well.
100%.
You know,
I'm a dad. You're a dad.
I'm a dad. I'm a dad to teenage girls. Keep praying for me. But you know,
when, ain't nobody praying for me.
Yeah. As Meg and I have been going through this book, one of the things we've both said is we want our eldest daughter, Chelsea, who's 16, about to turn 17. We want her to read this because we want her to learn about leading in the workplace, but we want her to learn about the influence she has at home in our family. Because she thinks, I'm 16, I'm about to turn 17. You have to give me more responsibility. No, we don't have to do that. But if you influence us, like that same principle works not just in a paid employment opportunity or a volunteer, it works in family as well and relationships with your kids, your parents, your spouse.
Right? Yes, your daughter doesn't have any authority over you, but if she paid attention to all of this and started leveraging these principles, she would have a lot of influence and her curfew would get later.
Exactly. Well, this is the thing we say. We always say to Chelsea, help us say yes to your request.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen in the moment that you present the request. That happens months earlier when you were enthusiastic when you were loyal in the little things, when you showed us that you were ready for that.
And the reverse is true. If you walk into your home today and say, everybody shut up and sit down, I'm the dad.
Yeah.
I drive a Dodge Stratus. If you did that, they would be like, I'll sit down because you are the boss.
Yeah.
But as soon as you leave the room, I'm going to bounce, because no one likes working for or following someone who's leveraging their authority to get you to do what they want you to do. That's not the way leadership works. Go ahead.
No, seriously, that's a joke, but I mean, I hope my granddad is not listening to this podcast, but literally my grandfather got so frustrated with some of my younger peers, as far as his grandkids. He said, granddad has spoken. And everybody literally wanted to laugh. And I felt so terrible, because like my grandfather, you know, like I respect my grandfather a lot, but it was kind of funny talking, talking to 6-year-olds and 7-year-olds, like, granddad has spoken. And I know it sounds so silly for us, we laugh about it, but it's like, that one was like, no one cared. And I felt so terrible to think about that. But to your point, it's like, it does not matter the age of who you're talking to.
Yeah.
Even a kid at that age understands influence inherently. Like, we're wired to understand influence over authority. And so the kids immediately turned to their parents who had the influence and said, do I have to listen to him?
Yeah.
They kind of like gave me a look like, do I have to? And they're like, yeah, you do. Okay. All right. Now mom told me I have to do it. So I'm going to do it.
That's powerful.
You know? And I'm like, man. And that's one thing that hit me the hardest. And I just want to just say one thing. I think it's very easy for every person who has a big vision to listen to Clay right now and say, you know, I hear what he's saying, and that's a really great way to succeed in my current role. And so I will play this game to succeed in my current role. And I'm only a few years behind him. But I think for me, my passion got me in more trouble. I mean, I was a kid getting my hand slapped at Dave's. Now luckily Dave's told you, hey, I'd rather get your hand slapped than not. So like he said, if there's no friction, then you're not doing enough movement. So he celebrated that and gave me, and so I was like, good, I'll thank you, Dave, for that. Without that, I probably would have been without a job. But I think the part of that going saying, okay, well, I just want to tell people right now, like, everything he's saying has come true in my own life. Clay and I've only been in the same room together twice. And I'm telling you, without a shadow of a doubt, like, if I had this book, I would have avoided so many issues before.
Yeah.
But I'm just telling you all, like, I would have leaned in to all of the drama I had with my boss instead of trying to get around it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would have thought, okay, if influence is the muscle I need to build, then I need to lean into, so the faster I build this muscle, the more successful the big vision will be. Mm-hmm. Like if anything, use those small moments that you feel like won't have any consequence and lean in, because that will build the muscle so you can lead your bigger vision later.
That's huge.
You know, and so actually say, hey, thank you all for training me on how to lead with influence over authority. Thank you, because I need that at the next level. And so I think I just want to say that in front of Clay, because I feel like I could put in the intro and outro and that'd be nice and all, but I'm like, no. Like, ignore this information at your own peril.
At your own peril.
I am so glad that you said that, because, you know, I work with you, Clay, and I wouldn't want it to come across as selfish ambition to have said exactly what he just said. But for real, if you're listening to this and you want to unpack these principles a little bit further, then I want to encourage you to pick up a copy of How to Lead When You're Not in Charge. And again, you might think that this is just a workplace book. It's so much bigger than a workplace book. It will help you in your workplace. It'll help you in your church. It'll help you in your volunteer roles. It will help you as a parent. It will help you as a child. I just...
As a husband? Leah, if you're listening, I'm going to tell the truth. One of my most recent fights was about me being overly passive. I'm a pretty proactive guy. So like that troubles me when I get caught for being passive. And she was dead on. But the whole fight was just saying, hey, you're being too passive in your parenting with Arden because of how much I'm leading her development I'm working from home. Like I need you to recognize, like, you can insert yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I'm totally guilty. You know?
Love it.
So, love it.
Yeah. I agree. And none of us are in charge of it in our marriages anyway, let's be honest.
Oh God. You want to talk about peril. Walk into your house like you're in charge.
Yes. Clay, where can we pick up a copy of the book?
I mean, it's any retailer, I hope. I mean, Amazon for sure, BarnesandNoble.com, and any major retailer.
We will make sure that the links are in the show notes to this podcast. Clay, can I just thank you once again for being in the bunker, for being such a great example of a leader, but also a great example of a follower as well. I'm sure that this has been extremely helpful for so many people listening. Thanks so much, mate.
Thank you, guys.
Well, I said it during the interview, Kevin. I think that that was one of the most incredible interviews we had. Clay just did such a fantastic job of really touching on some key bits of practical information that will help anybody lead up, right?
I was totally convicted, and I'm only 32.
Yeah.
But I'll be quick to say that when he was talking, I was like, I just wish I had someone pull me to the side when I was 23 or 22 and just say, hey, Kevin, what's holding you back is not your creativity, it's not your hustle, it's not your commitment even to the mission.
Yeah.
It is the fact that your passion is almost becoming an enemy because you don't know how to wield it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know how to use it for and gain influence with those who you work with. And he gives this, everyone needs this book. That's why I just leave it there.
Yeah, I think everybody needs this book, How to Lead When You're Not in Charge, but they also need to listen to this podcast. So I want to encourage all of you right now, whoever's listening to this, whoever got something out of it, even if it was just one piece of practical application, please make sure you share this podcast with your teams, with your friends, with your family, with your mates, whatever it might be, because this doesn't just apply to ministry. It doesn't just apply to work. One of the things I love that Clay said was it applies to family life as well. We all are leading our family. We're all leading up in some capacity. And sometimes you're not always in charge. And this is such a great book that provides so many practical pieces of advice and practical applications that you can apply wherever it is that you are leading in your life. So we are so glad that you're able to join us today. Make sure you leave a review wherever you are listening to this podcast. Reviews really help us get the word out. We'd also love it if you could subscribe, whether that's on iTunes or Stitcher, Google Play, wherever it is that you're listening from. And also make sure you check out today's show notes. There are so many great tweetable bits of information. There's links to where you can get the book. There's show notes from what Clay had to say as well. You're going to absolutely love the show notes for this one. You can get that at thethinkorangepodcast.com. And as I said before, make sure you share this podcast as well with all of your family and friends. We're so glad that you've been able to join us here as we hit the road a little bit. Right, Kevin?
Absolutely. And I want to plug one more thing. I want to plug Frank's book too.
Let's you know, plug Frank's book
too. We're going to plug them all because I think you know, when I look at what these guys have put together in the past year, they're just such complimentary resources.
I completely agree. Frank's book is called The Myth of Balance.
That's right.
It's a book that I got to tell you, man, it rocked my world when I first read it. And when I followed up and had a chat with Frank about it afterwards, man, he's onto something really insightful that I think we all wrestle with, but not a lot of us talk about and not a lot of us have answers for either.
That's right. And if you want to know more about that book, we actually covered that early on the podcast. So if you go to some of our earlier episodes, we actually had Frank on to talk about that book. So go check that out as well. But I want to make sure we brought that up because I think those two books together are really helpful because if you're trying to lead up, you're probably also feeling really stressed.
Yeah.
Feeling like you're trying to do it all to show your boss or show your leader that you can handle it all. And you know, you're in a lot of tension. So,
yes.
But I don't want to kill the closing there, but I just want to make sure we said that. So to recap what Dave said, subscribe to the podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, visit the show notes and share it with a friend.
Kevin, I don't just think you're leading when you're not in charge here because you are in charge, let's be honest, but I think you want my job as well.
I do not
you
want your job.
Covering everything.
I don't want your
if
job.
If only at all. You had an Australian accent.
Very true.
Well, at some point, I want to hear your Australian accent. Okay,
it's terrible. My wife says every accent I do sounds like a Jamaican.
That's amazing. Well, we have had you sing before, and you know, maybe you're taking Ashley's job.
I think I sung in one episode as many times as Ashley sang the entire time she's been on the podcast.
It's so good. Well, if you're not going for my job, at least help me out with the last little bit that we always say as we sign off. Whenever you think next generation, think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.